702.
Political analysis.
Dr. Roelof Botha is my guest. Thank you so much, Doc. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us. I stumbled on this article in Business Tech, and I suppose the thing that really grabbed my interest was where you say that it's this monetary policy by the Reserve Bank is costing South African households 4,000 rands or an unnecessary 4,000 rands a month. Please explain this. Good evening to you, Doc.
Good evening. And to the listeners, thanks for having me. It certainly is unnecessary. The figure that you meant, that you refer to, that actually comes from the Better Bond property brief. But any homeowner will attest to that, to the fact that the repayments on mortgage bonds have shot through the roof ever since the Reserve Bank decided to raise interest rates for no particular reason, except that what shipping costs increased by 700%. Now, I don't know how a higher interest rate in South Africa is going to convince the shipping companies and the harbors that were closing all over the world between 2019 and 2021 because of COVID and lockdowns, how that's going to convince them or scare them into opening the harbors again. It's just nonsensical, the current policy stance of the Reserve Bank. On the average bond that is administered by Better Bond, your homeowners are now paying some a little bit less if they can negotiate a slightly more beneficial interest rate, others even more than that. I know of people that are paying 5,000 rand a month more every month on their mortgage loans, and it was never necessary to raise South African interest rates the way they did.
Let me ask the question, I suppose, the fundamental question around the monetary policy of the Reserve Bank that, in my very, very, very rudimentary understanding, Doc, seems to mean that when we raise interest rates, we somehow control inflation. Explain that relationship for me. How does raising of interest rates control inflation?
Okay, it's obviously a good question. Not all the listeners studied economics. Before we start answering that, one needs to distinguish between the two main types of inflation. The one is a demand inflation. They call that demand pull. And the other one is cost push, cost inflation. So the demand inflation can be controlled via the interest rates. It's fairly simple. What it comes down to is that if money is very cheap, let's assume that you can go to bank and you can borrow money at 1%. Not the current 11.75, which is crazy as far as I'm concerned. But you can borrow money at 1%, and you spot a bargain, whether it's a car, a property, whatever it is. You know, you're a trader. You like to buy and sell stuff at a higher price.
Yeah.
You're going to make some money. But if everybody latches onto this, then the demand for these cars and properties that you want to sell at a profit is going to be a lot more than the supply, and that's going to and people are going to start bidding against each other. And the best way to explain demand inflation is to just go to an auction. I'm assuming many of your listeners have been at an auction, and if there are only a limited number of items at an auction on the floor and there are too many buyers, then that price, the price of that item can skyrocket. It can go way beyond the replacement value. So that's demand inflation. And if we had demand inflation in South Africa in the last three years, I would have been the first to say, let's raise the interest rate. But we never had demand inflation. Not one iota of it. We only had cost inflation.
All right. So if I understand you correctly, demand inflation is when the price of an item goes very high because the supply for it is low and it is rare, and therefore and people are demanding it, therefore the market sort of adjusts itself by raising the value of that thing because it's high demand, but it's a rare commodity. You say that is demand inflation.
Yes.
All right. What is supply inflation?
Okay, that's the one that we've had in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So during COVID, between September 2019 and September 2021, over that two-year period, world shipping freight charges. This is now stuff that gets transported, imports and exports via the ocean. And by the way, 80% of all tradable goods in the world are transported via the ocean, not via air.
Yeah.
So this is a big deal. So what happened is with COVID, the harbors were closing, others were opening up again, and then as the ships are on their way to the harbor that's open, they close again and they have to make a U-turn. Now, this is quite expensive. So world shipping charges increased. You're sitting down, aren't you?
I am sitting.
700%. How would you like a 700% increase in your salary?
Sure.
700%. I'm not kidding you. You can go and look at the Statista's data. Okay, so, and that is the reason why inflation has been a problem until recently in most countries in the world. And just as a matter of interest, South Africa's inflation rate peaked at just above 7%, which is way lower than most of our major trading partners. When I saw that Germany had a higher inflation rate than South Africa 2.5 years ago, I went and I did my homework and I got to the root cause. This is the one of them. The other one is the Brent oil price, which went from $20 a barrel to $110, also because of COVID and because of that mass murderer called Mr. Putin in Russia. And that's exactly what he is.
As a result
of these two factors, the oil price quadrupled in price, world shipping freight charges increased by 700%, and everybody was grappling with inflation. And then the Reserve Bank decided, and we had not yet fully recovered from COVID. We had recovered nicely from COVID until the end of 2021. We had a nice recovery. We had high growth in 2021 as well, 2021, 2022. And then they decided to raise interest rates. It's as if they literally just followed the Federal Reserve in the United States. But South Africa is not the United States. We don't have zero unemployment.
So let me again, a fundamental question. So when we say inflation, we mean the rising of prices, basically.
Yes, it's prices that are increasing, but these prices are increasing beyond, and this is very important, beyond the control of any authority. If you are sitting in South Africa and you need, and you are manufacturing vehicles, I don't want to single out any particular manufacturer, but as I think the listeners appreciate the fact that we export cars.
Yeah.
Manufactured or assembled in South Africa to 150 different countries in the world.
Yeah.
But to manufacture those cars, we need to import engines, gearboxes, and all kinds of components. Some of them we manufacture here ourselves.
Yeah.
Others we just assemble.
Yeah.
Now, you are waiting for this engine that you want to put in this car and you want to export it to another country. Now, the cost of getting that engine to you has increased by 700%. So the price of the car has to increase.
Yes.
And now no economist in the world will be able to explain how a higher interest rate in South Africa is going to prevent world shipping freight charges from increasing. There's no correlation. No correlation. Interest rate increases or decreases cannot do anything about this.
Yes. I suppose it's very important for me to say to you that I have no economic background at all. So I'm also still trying to get my head around the terminology. So inflation is basically the rising of costs because of certain factors. Those factors can either be demand factors or they can be supply factors. And what the Reserve Bank then does is that it tries to cool off that inflationary behavior by raising or decreasing interest rates. Is that the relationship?
You're a fast learner. I think if you'd been in my class, you would have been one of those distinction students.
So
I must just tell you, I've taught economics for the better part of 5 decades at various universities, including Gibbs, Tuckies, UJ when it was Rao, etc. But what one just should remember here is that cooling off is the right term to use when you have demand inflation.
Yes.
Because demand inflation tells you that too many people are buying too much stuff.
Yes.
Which some of which have not been produced yet.
Right.
So, and in that environment, interest rates should increase.
Should increase.
But what happened,
yes. The effect. I don't want you to go away from that, because I really need to get it. So the effect of raising the interest rates rate at that time at the demand side of inflation means that it becomes more expensive, so less and less people buy, and therefore the demand is cooled off, and then we hope that the prices will go down again.
Yes, you see, if everybody had enough cash,
yeah,
to buy the stuff we've been talking about, cars, houses, whatever, right? Yeah. Then there would not be demand inflation. It would be hardly possible. But the dilemma is that people go to the banks and they borrow money,
yeah,
to buy cars. They borrow money to buy houses. They borrow money to buy all kinds of stuff. And if borrowing that money, the cost of credit is too low, is abnormally low.
Yeah.
As we started out, you can go and get a loan from the bank at 1%.
Yeah.
Right? Then that fuels this demand drive. But if that interest rate becomes 10%, or in our current environment, 11.75%, and you are a high-risk customer, so you're paying prime plus one, prime plus two, prime. I know people
you
are paying
can't pay
prime
anymore.
Plus 7%. You can't afford to borrow money to buy this stuff.
Or if you've got the loan, you can't pay it back anymore.
Well, that's your dilemma. You took out the loan when the interest rate was low.
Yeah.
And now the Reserve Bank pushes up interest rate. And by the way, I just want to make this point very clear for our listeners. The Reserve Bank of South Africa is one of the best central banks in the world. And I say that because of their adherence with the Basel II requirements. They are brilliant. It's only the five monetary policy committee members that I have a gripes with, because I don't think they look at the right data. Your total household consumption expenditure in South Africa last year, in real per capita terms, declined by more than one percentage point. We are buying less stuff every year. We have the opposite of demand inflation, and it's as if they cannot see this.
So your issue is to say the factors, the reasons why we have a supply side inflation is got nothing to do with the Reserve Bank's ability to cool off that situation. So why do you keep raising interest rates is your question?
Yes, it's quite foolish, and I'm being very diplomatic here. One of the results of this unnecessarily high interest rate scenario is that the households at the end of 2021 were paying 6.7% of their disposable incomes. That's now money from salary, wages, rent, wherever you get your money from, to pay debt costs, 6.7%. Now that is 9%. It's an increase of 34%. This is unbelievable, and I must make this point, please. In the beginning of 2020, January 2020, before COVID,
yes,
South Africa's prime rate was 10%. 10%. If you were paying prime on your mortgage loan, you were paying 10% prime.
Yes.
And inflation was around about 5%. So we had a real interest rate. That's now prime minus the inflation rate. 10 minus 5 is also 5. That was our real interest rate. The real interest rate now is 11.75%, that's the prime rate, minus CPI, which is 5.3, that gives you 6.5%. Why would you raise the real interest rate? In other words, and they had a restrictive monetary policy stance in 2020 already. I was criticizing them in 2020, in the beginning of the year,
yeah,
and in 2019 about their restrictive policy. We need a real interest rate of between 3% and 4%, which is what we had when Jill Marcus was governor of the Reserve Bank. But she really understood economics. And she realized that if you raise the interest rate too high, we're not going to have growth. And we had growth. We had almost 3% average growth when she was governor.
Because people could
now
spend.
We've got zilch growth. I wish she would come back from retirement, quite frankly.
So what you're saying to me is that we have used a policy that is meant to calm down or to cool down inflationary pressure that is from the demand side, right? That's the policy we've used, which works if it's demand side inflation. But because the inflationary pressures we have at the moment are supply side inflationary pressures, we can't be using a policy that is meant for demand side inflation for supply side inflation, because it's just got nothing to do with it. So why do you think they do this? Besides, simple answer that says no, this is just plain stupid. But maybe somebody out there, give us a call, 011-883-0702. Maybe you've got some insight. Why would the Reserve Bank apply a policy meant for demand side inflationary pressures on supply side inflationary pressures, putting all of South Africa, all of us as South Africans, under immense, immense economic pressure because we can't afford it? Why, in your opinion, maybe you are maybe a little closer to the economic space than I am. Give us a call. Maybe you can give us some insight as to why they do that. Professor Rudolf Botha says it's absolutely absurd. We should be paying round about 5% interest rate, not 11 point whatever. What are we paying now, Dr. Botha?
The current prime rate is 11.75. All I'm asking the Reserve Bank to do, by the way, they just think, I like to believe that they think it's fashionable to be overcautious. I'm not quite sure whether they look at the right data. All I want them to do is to take away the inconsistency. Go back to Jill Marcus's recipe. A real prime rate of between 3 and 4%, which means that the prime rate in South Africa today should be in the vicinity of 9%.
Oh, 9%.
Yeah, that should be, you know, that would be a cautious approach. They need to drop the interest rate by one hell of a margin. I must tell you that. Over the last year, credit impairments by banks have increased by more than 5% to a level of approaching 200 billion rand. Credit impairments, a direct result of overcautious monetary policy. And maybe some of the listeners will know this, but the Reserve Bank, the MPC, not the Reserve Bank, the MPC, the Monetary Policy Committee, they place too much emphasis on a little survey that is done about inflation expectations. So they ask people, some of whom have never, ever studied economics, not even in grade one. They ask them, what do you think inflation is going to be in 2 years from now? This is absurd. Now, some of these people that they ask are trade union representatives. Now, a trade union leader will always be biased in favor of higher inflation because they want to negotiate higher wages. That makes sense. Mm. So they will always raise those expectations. So what the MPC says is that, no, but this survey tells us that people think inflation is still going to be high next year, so we must keep interest rates high. There is absolutely no theoretical or academic basis for that survey. And maybe they just don't understand economics. I'm not sure. But what they're doing to the country right now is that they are harming this country. If they can just lower the interest rate, the advantages that can flow from that are absolutely immense.
Well, people will start spending, right?
Yeah. You see, if the interest rates are as high as they are now, who is suffering? Not the higher income groups. They've got some savings. They are laughing all the way to the bank. They're getting 10% on a fixed deposit. But what happens with higher interest rates, it acts as a tax, effective tax on venture capital. Somebody that wants to start a business, he's got a good idea, he saved a bit of money. But he must have got a little bit of money as well. He's out of the market, apart from homeowners that are battling to retain their homes. If they lower interest rates, we can have higher economic growth. We can have more employment creation. And you know what? SARS will be very grateful because that means more tax revenues. But it is as if the Reserve Bank ignores what I've just told you, and this is absolute factual.
Somebody says to me, explaining the idea behind inflation. I've got to quickly get it for you.
Alfred, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying to me, but let me just find it. Let me just find it. I thought it was very, very good how he condenses the ideas behind inflation. But I do want to also hear your analysis of our relationship with the American Federal Bank. You said something about the fact that we seem to be following the lead of the United States Federal Bank. We are not America. Explain that to me.
Well, it's just been uncanny. Every time they've raised their rates, more or less, we've raised our rates. But America doesn't have a problem with unemployment. They've got exactly the opposite situation. They have an unemployment rate of below 4%, but there is, in economics, a very well-known concept called the natural rate of unemployment. Mm-hmm. This is people that take sabbaticals to go and study further. These are people that are voluntarily unemployed because they want to climb Mount Everest, or they have just had newborns and they want to take care of them for a couple of months. And that natural rate of unemployment globally is estimated at between 3 and 4%. So what I'm trying to say is the U.S. does not have unemployment. We have 30% plus unemployment. We need to create jobs. The Reserve Bank's priority should be to encourage growth. And the funny thing is, and this is fascinating, that right now we have unutilized capacity in many sectors of our economy, up to 20%, which means there's 20% of your productive capacity standing idle. If they were to lower rates and people buy more stuff, that unutilized capacity shrinks, of course. But interestingly, if it means that your overhead costs, your fixed costs, are being spread over more units that you sell. So you are actually lowering the cost of production via the lower interest rates. The Reserve Bank can actually bring down inflation by lowering interest rates, but it is as if they don't understand.
I want to take some calls from some of our listeners that are listening to our conversation, and maybe they can be part of it. Volker is in Sandton. Hi, Volker.
Hi there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, interesting comments being made. And it is frustrating to hear about high interest rates trying to control cost-based inflation. I think I'd like the doc to comment on the way interest rates can protect the currency value against foreign currencies and the chaos that ensued in Turkey when they deliberately kept interest rates low and they got inflation rates of 50 and 100%.
Thanks very much, Volker. Doc?
Yes, it's tricky to compare a country like Turkey with a country like South Africa, quite frankly. One of the reasons why our inflation rate peaked at a much lower level than most of our trading partners is because we are the most food secure country on the African continent. We overtook Tunisia a couple of years ago. We are a huge net exporter of food and agricultural products, and that's one of the main reasons. So our economy is more diversified. We have a regional economy that we
more than Turkey's.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, yes, certainly. Certainly as far as agriculture is concerned.
Okay.
The thing about the currency, that is a well-known and a valid point, except that when you have abnormal circumstances like a pandemic, which hopefully doesn't happen more than once a century, you have wars flaring up all over the world, you have uncertainty, then safe haven assets attract significantly more fund flows. And one of your safest investments that you can ever make is a U.S. 10-year bond. And when that interest rate increased from very low levels, marginally above zero, up to almost 5%, where it is now again, then fund managers will pull out investments from emerging markets like South Africa, like Chile, like Mexico, like Singapore, and they will invest in U.S. dollars. And all of these currencies, and by the way, also the euro, will suffer as a result of that. There is absolutely nothing that you can do about that. You must just ride that wave. You must ride that wave. When John Marcus was governor of the Reserve Bank, on two occasions, because of temporary exchange rate weakness, the South African inflation rate went above the Reserve Bank's top target range of 6%. She did not panic. She didn't raise interest rates. She understood economics. She knew it was just a question of time. They will all come running back. I've just done some research today on the dividend income, which was received by South Africa since 2019. It is absolutely unbelievable. It went from 32 billion first quarter 2019 to 83 billion in the fourth quarter of 2023. And this is two-way traffic. The rand will always recover. We are one of the 20 most traded currencies in the world. It's as if the Reserve Bank doesn't appreciate this.
I want
to
take...
Yes, you are going to take a hit now and then. Yeah. You must just ride that wave. Your exchange rate will recover.
I want to take a call from Dave in Malbarton. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, you finally got onto after more than half an hour. Happy birthday, by the way, Orbs.
Thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate it, man.
You finally, after more than half an hour, got onto the key weakness of what the prof is saying, which is the flow of foreign exchange funds. And you've got to keep an eye on that if you want to protect the value of the rand. The job of the Reserve Bank, the prof made one error just now, and he said the Reserve Bank's job is to encourage growth, or it has the potential to encourage growth. That's not its primary responsibility. In fact, it's not its responsibility at all at the moment. In law, its responsibility is to protect the value of the rand. And it did a bloody lousy job of that. Because I've grown up in a time when the rand was actually for a while more valuable than the dollar. Mm. I think when 94 came, the rand was about 2 rand to the dollar, and now it's nearly 20 rand to the dollar. So protecting the value of the rand is critically important.
How does that happen, Dave? How does interest rates, or let's put it this way, how does the Reserve Bank protect the value of the rand? How does it do that technically?
It can do it by a number of different mechanisms. It can buy up currency, but given the fact that the government has decided to dip into 150 million of the funds that we keep for such eventualities, it's going to be much more difficult to do things like that in future. The only thing it can do is it can raise rates to the point where it's more attractive to invest in South Africa than in America. And yes, it depends obviously on the conditions at the time and the level of uncertainty. But in fact, another mistake was to say we followed the American Reserve Bank. We didn't follow the Reserve Bank. We saw it coming, and our Reserve Bank was smart enough to actually preempt and raise before America did, so that we didn't have negative foreign exchange funds. So that's the aspect on which you need to, that's the weakness in this whole argument, that you don't react to inflation globally. Because if you don't, you're going to lose your foreign currency that's invested.
But how do you react to it if you don't?
And buying bonds.
How do you react? I mean, to the doctor's point, how do you effectively react to it if there's very little you can do to affect how costs are derived at in jurisdictions outside of your own?
I agree 100% with that argument. I agree. I understand clearly the difference between cost-push inflation and demand-driven inflation. And the prof is exactly right about that. 100% of what he said is absolutely correct, and your interpretation of that is correct. But that doesn't take account of protecting the value of the currency. That is the Reserve Bank's primary job. And by raising inflation, by raising interest rates, it has the effect of protecting the currency and retaining foreign investment in South Africa. People buy South African bonds, not just the American 10-year bond. People buy and invest in this bond here because it offers them better returns. If you want all that money to leave the country, fine, drop inflation. Drop your exchange rate.
Dave, thanks very much for your call. Prof? It's the money that's leaving this country that's the problem. But the Reserve Bank is here to protect the value of the rand. Explain that to me.
It's Aubrey, is it?
Yeah.
Aubrey, I'm sorry. They told me this interview would last for 20 minutes. I'm on a deadline here.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, doctor. This is the last question, and we'll let you go. Sorry.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
And I get paid good money to teach economics. but the previous caller must just go and look at the mission statement of the South African Reserve Bank, the same as all central banks. It's a twin mission statement: protect the value of the currency is entirely correct, but also not to neglect growth and employment creation. And we must decide what is more important, a marginally higher inflation rate or more jobs and lower interest rates and lower mortgage loans. Now, the listeners can take a vote on this. Why don't you try that one? Let them vote, which is more important. I vote for jobs. Yeah. That's what I want in this country. I want people to have jobs.
Yeah.
And we are not going to have jobs if we have a monetary policy committee that thinks that this is the first world. This is not the first world. This is Africa. We need to be smarter than that, quite frankly. Thanks for chatting to
Dr.
me.
Dr. Roelof Botha, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me. We loved this masterclass on economics 101. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. Much appreciated.